Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, 7th Canto, Chapter 5, Text 19. Tata inam guru gyatva gyata gyeha chatustayam daityendram darshayam daasha matrir mristam alankritam tata inam guru gyatva gyata gyeha chatustayam daityendram darshayam asha matrir mristam alankritam tata inam guru gyatva gyata gyeha chatustayam daityendram darshayam asha matrir mristam alankritam Vaishnavis. Tata, thereafter, inam, him, Prahlad Maharaj, guru, his teachers, gyatva, knowing, gyata, known, gyaya, which are to be known, chatustayam, the four diplomatic principles, Sama, the process of pacifying. Dana, the process of giving money in charity. Beda, the principle of dividing. And Danda, the principle of punishment. Daitra Indram, unto Hiranyakasipu, the king of the Daitras. Darsayam, presented. Matrir Mristam, being bathed by his mother. Alankritam, decorated with ornaments. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada. After some time, the teachers, Sanda and Amarka, thought that Prahlad Maharaj was sufficiently educated in the diplomatic affairs of pacifying public leaders, appeasing them by giving them lucrative posts, dividing and ruling over them, and punishing them in cases of disobedience. Then, one day, after Prahlad's mother had personally washed the boy and dressed him nicely with sufficient ornaments, they presented him before his father. Purport. It is essential for a student who is going to be a ruler or king to learn the four diplomatic principles. There is always rivalry between a king and his citizens. Therefore, when a citizen agitates the public against the king, the duty of the king is to call him and try to pacify him with sweet words, saying, You are very important in the state. Why should you disturb the public with some new cause for agitation? If the citizen is not pacified, the king should then offer him some lucrative post as a governor or minister, any post that draws a high salary, so that he may be agreeable. If the enemy still goes on agitating the public, the king should try to create dissension in the enemy's camps, in the enemy's camp. But if he still continues, the king should employ argumentum ad baculum, severe punishment, by putting him in jail or placing him before a firing squad. The teachers appointed by Hiranyakasipu taught Prahlad Maharaj how to be a diplomat so that he could rule over the citizens very nicely. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Pastaya Bhutale Shimati Bhakti Vedanta Swaminite Namane Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Pacharini Nivashesha Sanyavadi Pastakacharya Shatarani. So we're getting to a very exciting part of this pastime. It's just right around the corner. But right here we have Sandana Marka is just getting ready to present Prahlad to his father. They felt that, okay, now, you know, he's learned something. They've instructed him in these diplomatic principles. Basically, what Prabhupada mentions to me in the word for word translation, Sama, the process of pacifying, Dana, the process of giving money in charity, Beda, the principle of dividing, and Danda, the principle of punishment. In other words, the first thing is you try flattery, then bribery, then sabotage, and punishment or aggression. Those are the ways in which a ruler is, or a king is, taught to deal with opposition. And Prabhupada in the purport here, he goes over that. He sort of reiterates or elaborates upon what's stated here in the translation, but not sarcastically. In other words, this is good knowledge. This is, you know, actually the bona fide process for a ruler or a king to deal with opposition to his rule. And it's interesting that Sandana Marka had this knowledge. It's not surprising. It's interesting, but it's not surprising because they were the sons. Sandana Marka were the sons of Sukracharya, and Sukracharya is the spiritual master for the demons. And Sukracharya is also the spiritual master for Hiranyakasipu here, and he's the spiritual master. He's the spiritual master for Bali Maharaj. Sukracharya is a Vedic scholar, as we remember. I think we just heard recently because it was the Bhamana Dev's appearance day, and we went over, you know, that pastime was discussed. Sukracharya, in preaching to Bali Maharaj, was citing many Vedic references, you know, in his argument why Bali Maharaj should not cooperate with Vishnu. So, you know, he was a Vedic scholar. He was very conversant in the Vedic knowledge. And this is, you know, an aspect of that, this little bit of this teaching here about how the uh, the ruler or the king is meant to, you know, deal with the opposition to his rule. So this knowledge was being taught by Sam Denamarca to Pilad, and they felt like at this point they had taught him sufficiently, and they were, you know, they kind of got it into his head, stuffed his head with this stuff, and now they're ready to present him to his father, and you know, when his father inquired from what have you been learning, he would kind of give this back to him, and then that would be fine, you know, he'd be happy, and they'd be happy, because the father would be, you know, think, okay, now the boy's finally getting back on the right track. Unfortunately for them, that's not what happened. But one question comes to mind. Why was it that Pilad was not interested in these teachings? Because, you know, this is good stuff. This is, and he was the eldest son, right, of Hiranyakasipu. So by the law of primogeniture, I think that's the correct word, pronunciation, he was destined to become the next ruler. So he could have been thinking, well, okay, my father's the ruler now, and eventually I'm going to be the ruler, so I should learn this. I'm going to need to know this stuff for when I'm the ruler, you know. So why was it that he wasn't thinking like that? Well, we know the answer. The answer was that Pilad, unlike Hiranyakasipu and Sam Denamarca, Pilad knew the whole picture. This is my philosophical speculation. He knew the whole pictures. Pilad was instructed by Narada Muni when he was in the womb of his mother. This was unknown at this point. And really, from what I can understand, even after reading through the whole pastime, it's something that's unknown to Hiranyakasipu and Sam Denamarca, really throughout the entire thing. It doesn't come out till much later that how Pilad got this transcendental knowledge. Because very, very shortly following, Hiranyakasipu asked Pilad point blank. He said, where did you learn all this stuff? You know, you weren't taught this by your teachers. Because when Pilad, it's right around the corner here, it's coming. You know, Hiranyakasipu is going to embrace Pilad. He's going to be, you know, see him. He's so happy to see him. Tears are coming from his eyes, basically tears of joy. And he embraces Pilad and he smells his head and he puts him up on his lap. And he asks him, okay, what's the best thing you've learned? You know, and he tells him, you know, Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu, Smananam, Padasevanam, like that, etc. So, and Hiranyakasipu basically goes into shock. Well, not shock, but he's, you know, he's irate. He becomes so disturbed. And then he immediately accuses the teachers. What's, you know, you rascals, you know, how have you taught him this, you know? And they said, it's not us, you know. Don't accuse us. Don't falsely accuse us. We haven't taught him this at all. So then, you know, and he accepts it. You know, he accepts what they said. And then he turns to Pilad, and he asks Pilad, you know, how have you learned this? But Pilad doesn't tell him. Interesting to note, Pilad doesn't tell him. He doesn't spill the beans, you know. He doesn't say, well, it was Narada Muni when I was in the womb of my mother. Because, I don't know, I mean, it's not directly stated, so you don't know. But, you know, Pilad was no ordinary five-year-old boy. I mean, he was instructed by Narada Muni and the woman. He got transcendental knowledge, and it seems as if from the way he's behaving that he understood the whole picture. You know, he understood the whole situation, everything that was going on there. He understood his father was like a big demon, king of the demons, and possibly if he divulged his source of information, they would go hunt down Narada Muni and try to do something to him. You see, so he didn't say. He just went, he continued to instruct him at that point. And then, of course, we know that, you know, Hiranyakasipu just became progressively more angry and incensed. And then that's when he ordered his servants to try to kill Pilad at that point. But anyway, so, you know, Pilad, he wasn't interested in this knowledge, to answer my own question, because he had superior knowledge. I mean, if he was just like an ordinary kid, just happened to have some devotional inclinations, he's thinking, well, my father's the king, I'll be the next king. You know, if Prita Maharaj was his father or something like that, he might have been interested because he's, you know. But no, he knew the overall situation, and he had the transcendental knowledge from Narada Muni. And so therefore he wasn't interested in this. You know, he wasn't interested in this. And he also kind of, you know, maybe he didn't have a, you know, I don't think you could say that he knew that, well, you know, what was going to unfold, how he was going to, his father was going to attempt to kill him and he's going to be saved by Lord Nisringadev. But one thing he did know is he knew his father was a big demon, apparently, because he wasn't prepared to tell him where he, you know, got his knowledge from. And he knew that he had superior knowledge and that he wasn't going to compromise. You know, he had that knowledge and he was going to take shelter of that knowledge and he wasn't interested in this, you know, inferior stuff. So anyway, so then, as I said, eventually he does, how we do find out that that's how he got that knowledge is later on, after Hiranyakasipu attempts to kill him in various ways, you know, by various different means, and is completely unsuccessful. And then Hiranyakasipu becomes very morose, it's described, like Kamsa, or like Jarasandha, after they, you know, Kamsa attempted to kill Krishna in so many different ways, and at one point he became very morose, and same thing with Jarasandha, he attempted to kill, you know, defeat Krishna's armies, Krishna and Balaram, and was unsuccessful so many times. And both of them, they were encouraged by their demoniac association to don't take this so hard. It's actually, and you know, they rationalize the whole situation and they explain to him why it's not so, you know, don't be too concerned about this. Just continue on, and they did. You know, so the same thing kind of happened, as we'll hear, to Hiranyakasipu. He became very morose because he was thinking this boy, by his own power, he's not only invulnerable, basically, but he's totally, you know, not concerned. I mean, it's not only that I can't injure him, you know, kill, what to speak of kill him, I can't even hurt him in any way, but he's totally, like, not even worried about the whole thing. So, you know, Hiranyakasipu just, you know, he thought, wow, this is it. I mean, this is going to be a big problem, you know. But then Sandhanamarka came and actually explained to him, yeah, don't worry, this kid is nice. He's nothing to worry about. His powers are inconsequential anyway. And don't worry. We're going to, you know, just let him stay in the school and we'll continue teaching him. And, in due course of time, he'll straighten out and fly right, so to speak. You know, he'll start worshiping Sukracharya and, get connected to a spiritual master like that. That's what they were, you know, the lines along which they were, you know, preaching to Hiranyakasipu, and he accepted that. So what happened was Prahlad went back to school. You know, he wasn't, Hiranyakasipu was not successful in these attempts to kill Prahlad at that point. That was the point at which was coming up where, you know, throws him under the big elephant's foot and puts him in there with the big poisonous snakes and throws him off mountains and tries to drown him and poison him and have him chopped up by the demons. That's all coming up very shortly. So after all that, and him becoming morose, and Sandhanamarka convinced Hiranyakasipu, okay, put him back in school. So they did that. So then what happened was, something they didn't expect, that Prahlad starts preaching to his classmates, you see? And his classmates got inspired. His classmates liked it. You know, at first they were going, come on, don't bother us, you know, we're kids, we want to enjoy, we want to play. And then Prahlad Maharaj just basically convinced them by his preaching that, no, there's no, you know, don't waste any time. You don't know when you're going to die. You know, this human form of life is a great boon, great benediction. You have to take advantage of every single moment. Now, we should immediately start engaging in devotional service to Krishna, you know, right away. And he was a pure devotee, and he had bhakti shakti, and he inspired them, and they became devotees. And then at some point they inquired from him, hey, how is it that you know all this? You know, and that's when we learn all the rest of the information. He told them, I was instructed by Narada Muni. I guess he felt that they were enough devotees at that point that he could confide in them and, you know, reveal that information, because it was a secret up till that point. So he told them, he explained the whole situation to him, that how he was instructed by Narada Muni within the womb of his mother, and he told the whole story about how when his father went away to perform the austerities, his mother was captured by the demigods, and the demigods were about to, take his mother away and try to do something to him because they thought he was going to be a big demon too, and Narada Muni came to the rescue, and she was residing with Narada Muni, and Narada Muni instructed his mother in devotional service, but actually Prahlad Maharaj was the beneficiary. His mother forgot everything. It's described, I don't know if it's mentioned here, but Prabhupada in a lecture I heard him say his mother couldn't remember anything, but Prahlad remembered everything, you know, and so that's how he got that knowledge. And so he told that to his classmates. And then eventually what happens is Prahlad will, be so successful in preaching to his classmates that Sandhanamarka, the teachers, they realize that, you know, eventually they figure out what's going on, and they start freaking out like anything, because now it's not only Prahlad that's become a devotee of Krishna, but the entire, you know, Gurukul is becoming devotees of Krishna. So they figure, we're in big trouble now, you know? So they figure before it gets any worse, they go to Hiranyakasipu and they tell him what's going on, that, you know, it's not happening like what we thought it was going to work out like. You know, they're all becoming devotees of Krishna. So Hiranyakashipu at that point decides to take matters into his own hands, and you know, goes and he confronts Prahlad, and you know, and then they have that scene where he, you know, challenges him, and where, you know, so they have that little debate, and he finally says, "Where is your god? Is he in there in that pillar?" And Prahlad goes, "Well, yeah, as a matter of fact, he is." And Hiranyakashipu goes, "Oh yeah!" And then Lord Nrisimhadev comes out. Yeah, so that's kind of the rest of the story. But yeah, it's interesting. You know, so that's Prahlad. Really, he must have known everything, because just from the way he behaved, you can kind of understand that. So one very interesting thing to note, you know, about all this is, you know, we're getting information here about in these chapters about how the demons, you know, how they relate, how they deal, what their psychology is, and how they deal with each other. And it's an interesting contrast we can make between, you know, look at the way, like, personalities like Hiranyakashipu and Kamsa and who else? Ravana. You know, look how they deal with people, and look at the way in which Krishna and his representatives deal with people. See, here's Prahlad Maharaj trying to offer him, his father, good knowledge. You know, the best possible knowledge, or the best that life has to offer. And look at the way in which Hiranyakashipu is responding by trying to kill him. You see? And he's trying to destroy him. And same thing with Kamsa. You know, it's a very auspicious situation. But as soon as his own self-interest was threatened, see, that's the point. That's the demons, you know. If they're nice. You know, demons don't mind if other people are enjoying a bit, as long as they're enjoying more, and that more is a lot. But you see, but as soon as their self-interest is threatened, then it's a whole different thing. You know, then it's like it's a whole black and white, a whole different personality immediately becomes emerges, and that's, you know, the case here with Hiranyakashipu. We see that happening. There's no discussion. I mean, there's no, you know, mention here of any, like, what he could say. But Prahlad, you know, this, you're worshiping Vishnu. Vishnu killed your uncle Hiranyaksha. I mean, do you think that's a good idea? It's just immediately like flipped out, and he's ready to kill his son. In the same way, Kamsa, when as soon as he heard that omen from the sky about the eighth son of your sister will kill you, immediately he's pulling out his sword, ready to kill his sister. He didn't even stop to think, and as Prabhupada mentions this in the Krishna book, he didn't even stop to think. Vasudev had to point it out to him that it's not my sister that's going to kill me, it's her eighth son. He's, you know, he's ready to, you know, his self-interest is being threatened, you see? So immediately, you know, do something about it, kill her. Like that, not taking into consideration that it's a sister, not taking into consideration that it's her wedding day, and he's actually driving him back right after the wedding ceremony. So, you know, Papa said, this is the demonic mentality. And there's so many other examples of that, like that. So, and the contrast is, you know, look at, so that's the way the demons are, you know, respond when their self-interest is threatened. They just, you know, they're ready to eliminate the opposition completely, with no consideration for whether it's, you know, a sister, a son, or whatever. You know, self-interest is threatened. Okay, destroy them. And whereas on the opposite end of the spectrum, we have the way Krishna deals with, you know, different personalities. I mean, I guess the classic example of the most opposite end of the spectrum is the way in which Krishna dealt with Putana. Putana was actually one of Kamsa's hench women, I guess you'd say, not henchmen, but henchwoman. And, you know, she came to try to kill Krishna, basically, you know. But because she offered her breast milk, Krishna accepted that, oh, well, she did some service. She, you know, he accepted the bright side, Prabhupada says in different lectures, you know. He took the bright side. He didn't take the inimical side that she was coming to kill me. Krishna took it, oh, she's coming to, maybe she was coming to kill me. But anyway, she offered her breast, to, you know, for me to suck. And so she acted like my mother. So anyway, so Putana got personal liberation in the Vatsalya Ras. You know, she was, like, I think, promoted to become a nurse, which is, like, you know, the assistant of a mother in Goloka Vrindavan, if I'm remembering correctly. So look at the difference there, you know. I mean, here's somebody coming, in the case of, like, Hiranyakashipu, somebody's coming to offer him the best of life has to offer, and he's responding in the worst possible way. But in the case of Krishna, somebody's coming to offer him the worst, you know, Putana, trying to kill him, and Krishna rewards her with Vatsalya Ras, personal liberation. So that's something to meditate upon. The nature, of the different personalities here, the nature of the personality of Krishna, or the pure devotees of Krishna. And that's not an isolated incident. I mean, there's so many different examples of Krishna doing like that, like that for his devotees. I mean, there's the great, wonderful example of when all those princesses were captured by Bomasura, I believe it was, and they were being held in captivity for some period of time. And finally, they were able to get a message to Krishna that, hey, help. we've been captured by this demon. And we're like, it's horrible. You've got to save us. And Krishna did. He came and he killed, who's it, Bomasura? Bomasura, right? He killed him and he freed all the princesses. And then, on top of that, when he said, okay, go home now. You're free to go home now. You've been, go back, and they stood there, and he said, well, what's up? And he said, well, we can't go home. Why? He said, well, we've been out of the home now for a long time. I don't think Prabhupada and then he mentioned the exact length of time, but, we've been out of home for some period of time. We can't return because, they won't accept us. That was the social system at the time. Even if Prabhupada, in a lecture I heard him, Prabhupada say, even to this day, or even like as recently as 50 years ago, if a girl was out of the house for even one night, it'd be very difficult to get her married. The social system was very strict like that. So they were thinking like that. So Krishna said, so what do you want me to do? And they said, well, you have to marry us. And Krishna said, okay. And he married, everybody knows the story, but it's nice to hear it again and again, like we hear the Hare Krishna mantra again and again. There's no repetition is not a fault in Krishna consciousness. So, Krishna agreed to marry them. And Krishna, and not only that, Krishna realized, well, these are princesses. I can't just marry them and throw them all in one big apartment or something like that. It wasn't like Krishna just decided, okay, I'll just set up a Brahmacharini ashram and we'll put them all in there, No, Krishna treated each one of them like a queen. He built a separate palace, constructed to each one of them. And then Krishna realized, well, wait a second, there's 16,000 of them, and there's only one of me. If I just go to see one queen each night, it'll take, I don't know if he did the math, but, it'll take 47 years. Actually, I did the math, and it'll take 47 years before I can see all of them. So Krishna decided he expanded himself into 16,000 Krishnas. So, and he was simultaneously present with each and every one of the those queens, in their palaces like that. So that's, another example of how Krishna is so wonderful. Krishna is reciprocating, with his devotees. I mean, the basic principle is like, the demons, they're always thinking about how they can, that's a demonic mentality, how can I benefit myself? But Krishna the bona fide representatives of Krishna are always thinking of how to benefit others. That's like at the very core or the very essence of Krishna's psychology, how to benefit others. I mean, even our very reason for existence even is kind of tied into that psychology, because it's stated in the Veda somewhere that Krishna is one and he expands himself. We're spiritual expansions of Krishna. So what's the reason for that? Why does Krishna, and Prabhupada, mentioned this in different lectures, why does Krishna expand as the Vibhinamsas? Because there's Swamsa, there's Krishna, his own form, and the Supreme Personality of God, and then there's us. So why does Krishna expand as the living entities? Well, the answer for that is that to give us an opportunity to engage in reciprocal loving relationships. It's like an opportunity for us. It's actually like it's mercy. Just like, the Papa would give the example, why does a person, take the trouble to have a family, produce offspring like that? Because, to engage in those loving relationships. So it's at the very core of Krishna's psychology to, try to share the love, so to speak. Krishna's already he's the unique Supreme Personality of Godhead. He's Swarat. He's fully okay on his own. He doesn't need anything in addition to himself he doesn't need to enhance his existence in any way, but he, out of love, out of compassion, out of kindness might be the best word, I don't know, but he expands as living entities just to give us a chance to exist in the first place and engage in reciprocal loving relationships with him. So the scriptures are full of examples of Krishna manifesting that sort of giving psychology in so many different ways, and that's in the pastimes of Lord Krishna. There's those two examples. And then, of course, there's so many examples of the same sort of thing in the pastimes of Lord Chaitanya. A couple really classic examples that come to my mind of how compassionate and merciful Lord Chaitanya was I'll start from the least extreme and then build up. There's that pastime with Maharaj Pratapuja, and there's that one part where Maharaj Pratapuja wanted to see Lord Chaitanya, but Lord Chaitanya didn't want to see him because he was the king. You know, Lord Chaitanya was, of course, he was Krishna himself, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but he was playing the role of a sannyasi, and he played that very strict. He was a very strict sannyasi. You know, so much so that, like, you know, after he took sannyas, women had to pay obeisance. Lord Chaitanya never joked with any women. If a woman wanted to, you know, audience with Lord Chaitanya, she had to pay obeisances from a distance. You know, he very strictly observed sannyas. When the devotees were trying to offer him all sorts of facilities and everything, like there's that one where I think it was Damodar Pandit made some nice bedding for Lord Chaitanya. He didn't want to accept it. You know, he was really trying to be a strict sannyas. He ate very simply. You know, he was serious about the whole thing. So along those lines, he didn't want to see, even though he could, you know, the devotees were telling him, but hey, this king is a great devotee, et cetera, et cetera. No, he's a king. Pound, shilling, and pence, it's not right for a sannyasi to meet with a king. So he was refusing to do it, at least for a while there. So they, at one point they suggested, well, maybe, you know, you could meet with his son. You know, so they sent the son of Maharaj Pratapuja to see Lord Chaitanya. And a very interesting thing happened. He happened to look, at least to Lord Chaitanya's way of thinking, he reminded him of Krishna. He resembled Krishna. He had a darkish complexion. He was wearing yellow dhoti. And when Lord Chaitanya saw him, he thought, oh, this boy is so nice. He reminds everybody of Krishna. And he embraced him, you know. And he embraced him a second time. I can't remember the exact how it worked, the details of it. But when he embraced him, the boy became transformed into a great devotee. Just by, you know, he got the mercy, in other words. And Prabhupada says, actually, I'll read this because this is so nice. In one purport in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Prabhupada talks about this, and he says, if a person is actually blessed by the mercy of the Lord, he can immediately become a topmost devotee of the Lord. The logic of Nagna Matrika states that if a person is not elevated on such and such a date, he cannot become an exalted devotee overnight, as it were. This particular instance offers evidence to contradict that theory. On the previous day, this is really far out, on the previous day, the boy was simply an ordinary prince. He was an ordinary prince. And the next day, he was counted as one of the topmost devotees of the Lord. This was all made possible by the causeless mercy of the Lord. The Lord is omnipotent, all-powerful, and almighty, and he can act as he likes. See? So it's nice to meditate on this kind of thing because, you know, there's great hope. I mean, this happens, you know, this is like, Papa's not saying this is an isolated incident. Papa's not saying that, you know, this is something that don't happen then, but don't ever think that it could happen. I mean, here's the point, you know, it's by the causeless mercy of the Lord. He got the causeless mercy of the Lord, and he became elevated from an ordinary prince to one of the topmost devotees of the Lord. And Papa's, you know, he concludes by saying, the Lord is omnipotent, all-powerful, almighty, and he can act as he likes. So, put it in plain and simple language, hey, maybe this could happen to us. You know, we should think like that. We should think like that. Hey, maybe this could happen to me. And we should more than think like that. We should actually like desire. And there's no harm in it. I mean, what's the harm to desire? This should happen to me. You know, we could pray to Krishna. Because, I mean, Rupa Goswami, there's one verse by Rupa Goswami where he talks about, you know, somebody, I don't know the Sanskrit, I can't remember the English translation correctly, you know, exactly. But the gist of it is that it's very rare. It's very rare to get devotional service. And you can't necessarily expect to get devotional service even by performing pious activities for many, 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 many lifetimes. He said, but if there is a way to get, you know, devotional service, there's one price by which you can purchase devotional service. And that is, he says, intense greed. Right? Did I basically get intense greed? That's the instruction of Rupa Goswami. So you have to be greedy to get the mercy of the Lord. It's okay to be greedy. It's actually not just okay. It's recommended to be greedy to get the mercy of the Lord. So, you know, you hear something like this and we could be praying to, you know, to Lord Chaitanya, Lord Nityananda, please, you know, give me that mercy. Give me that mercy that, you know, something like, give me that mercy that that ordinary prince got, that son of Maharaj Prataparudra, that, you know, from today, I'm starting tomorrow, I could be considered one of the topmost devotees of the Lord. That's what happened to him, you see. And there's no loss, because, I mean, if you get that benediction, you've hit the jackpot, you know. But if you don't, there's no loss, because you've been thinking of Krishna, you're praying to Krishna. And Krishna is all good absolute, you see. So any meditation, any praying you do to Krishna for a benediction like that, and that's a devotional, it's a spiritual benediction, it's not praying for fulfillment of a material desire, you're getting purified. You know, Prabhupada gives that example of the, you know, the sun, the powerful sun shining on the filthy places. You know, Krishna's prophylactic and antiseptic. Krishna never gets contaminated, but the thing that, you know, that he gives the example of a ditch, a pool full of urine. So that urine, you know, gets evaporated and the whole area gets sterilized, you see. So in the same way, if you just take your, at least in my case, take my urine-like consciousness and you put it in the presence of Krishna, who's like the powerful, you know, Nevada desert sun or something like that, then our urine-like consciousness will get purified. You know, just like the sun cleans up and sterilizes that whole situation. See, so that's why it's said. That's why another instruction by Rupa Goswami says, yena tena prakarena mana krishna nivasayat. That somehow or other, you know, that instruction is given. Somehow or other, become attached to Krishna. And then he goes on to say, then the ability to follow all the rules and regulations will, you know, it'll come. But initially, somehow or another, get, you know, think of Krishna, become attached to Krishna. And the result will be, because once again, Krishna is all good, absolute, we become purified. You see? So like that, we can pray. We can pray to, you know, for this, to, you know, to get this causeless mercy of the Lord. And you could say, well, you know, that was Maharaj Prataparudra's son. He must say Maharaj Prataparudra was a great devotee. The kid must have at least been very pious. I mean, you know, that's the kind of thing that happens to people who have got some adhikar, you know, some qualification. But, you know, it doesn't happen to some fallen, really, really fallen people. Yeah, it did. It did. I mean, there's other examples of it happened to really fallen people, too. There's that one pastime where Lord Chaitanya was traveling, you know, and he was, they got him to Vrindavan. I think it was Balabhadra Bhattacharya was his traveling companion. And so they were there in Vrindavan. But what happened was Lord Chaitanya, when he got to Vrindavan, he was in so much ecstasy that he, you know, he couldn't, like, he wasn't in an external consciousness all the time. It was becoming a problem that they took him to Akrura Ghat. And when he got to Akrura Ghat, he was remembering, oh, this is the place where Akrura, you know, saw the spiritual world and like that. You know, he's just remembering the different pastimes there. So he just dove into the water, and he stayed underwater for a long time. And his associates, I think there was a Sanodiya Brahmin there with him, and a couple other people too. I think that the party was about five people at that point. So they became very worried because, you know, he was going to drown. So they had to pull him out, and which they did. And of course, he didn't drown. And then this Balabhadra Bhattacharya was confiding in the son of the Brahmin. He's saying, "We got to get him out of here. I can't deal with this." You know, Lord Chaitanya's, and you know, he's constantly going into ecstasy like this. I mean, today I was there to pull him out of the water, but another occasion, who knows what's going to happen? So. And plus, so many people are coming with these invitations, and I can't deal with it, you know. So let's take him to Prayag for the Sankara Makara. I can't remember the name of it, but they were taking him, you know, for some special festival, and that would be auspicious too. And Lord Chaitanya had really no desire to leave Vrindavan, but they thought, you know, he agreed because his servants, he wanted to just reciprocate with his servants who, you know, they were trying to do the best for him, so he reciprocated. Okay, we're kind of running out of time, so I'll wrap it up. But anyway, so there's that example. So then what happened was, here's the point. So they were traveling, okay? They're on their way to Prayag or whatever it was. So they're going through a field, and there's a cowherd boy in the field. He's just taking care of the cows, and he blows a flute. And when Lord Chaitanya heard that, he went into ecstasy because, you know, he was reminded of Krishna. He went into ecstasy, and he went unconscious, and he fell unconscious. And right at that time, there was like some Pathans, you know, they were Muslim soldiers. And they came upon the scene and they saw what had happened and they thought, aha, here, now we now understand what's happened here. This sannyasi has had a lot of gold and you've given him a poison or a drug called Datura and, you know, you're going to steal all his gold and like that and we're going to kill you. You know? So they were prepared. You know, they were prepared. They trumped up some charges against him, and they were prepared to kill the associates of Lord Chaitanya. So, you know, when they were accused like this, one of them said, you know, the Brahmin said, no, that's not the case. You know, actually, his servants, and that he has a disease, something like epilepsy. If you wait here, you know, you can keep us under arrest and wait here patiently, and you'll see he'll come back to consciousness, and he'll, you know, confirm what we're saying and like that. And you know, and then Rajput Krishnadas said, actually, he was like a bit of a chhatri. He said, actually, I'm local, and I have you know, so many soldiers just off in the distance with so many cannons. If I just yell loudly, they're going to come here and kill you and plunder your horses and your and their saddles and like that. So they're a little bit hesitant, you know, and the two Bengalis that were with them were kind of shaking. It's destroyed. But anyway, so what happened was, fortunately for everybody, Lord Chaitanya regained consciousness, and he went, Haribo! And he just regained consciousness and started chanting and dancing. And there were everybody, including the, you know, especially these Muslim soldiers were kind of like, what the heck is going on now? But they can understand this is no ordinary, this is some special, special personality. So they immediately kind of, you know, came down, and they approached him, and they gave their explanation of for their behavior, that, you know, we could see that these people had, you know, had given you this drug to Torah, and they were trying to take you. Lord Chaitanya, this, no. He confirmed the version of the Brahmin, the son of the Brahmin. And anyway, so they basically just, their whole thing changed. And one of them was supposed to be a scholar in the Quran. And there's some very interesting, if you ever get a chance, read that pastime, because there's some very interesting statements Prabhupada makes about the Quran there. Apparently the Quran is not fully understood, according to the version of Chaitanya Charitamrita, is not even fully understood by the members of its own tradition. The final conclusion of the Quran is that God is a person, and that he has a blackish complexion, and that, you know, the personal understanding of the absolute truth is supposedly established in the Quran, according to Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami there. But anyway, what happened was this personality tried to establish the impersonal understanding of the Quran, and Lord Chaitanya refuted, cut all his arguments to pieces. Anyway, make a long story short, they became devotees. They became devotees. They got the mercy of Lord Chaitanya, the whole group of them, you know. One of them was Vajuli Khan. He was the son of a Muslim king, and the whole group of them got the devotees, and they spent the rest of their life traveling around as mendicants. They became known as the Patan Vaishnavs, and they traveled throughout India. And they were just, you know, chanting the glories of Lord Chaitanya. Then the most extreme example, really quickly, was this. Lord Chaitanya was visiting Jagannath Puri at one point, and he wanted to go traveling again. He had to go through this area where there was a drunken Muslim governor who was very inimical to Brahminical culture and cows. And same sort of thing happened. You know, they were going to make an arrangement so Lord Chaitanya could, you know, pass through that area peacefully. And in the process, this Muslim governor caught wind of what was going on. He sent a spy over to see what was happening. The spy became overwhelmed by ecstatic love of God. When he went back to their, you know, to the Muslim camp, the secretary to that governor, he became affected by the spy. He became overwhelmed by ecstatic love for God. And then the Muslim governor became. And then finally, the long story short again is that the Muslim governor became a great devotee of Krishna. So in those, these kind of things are there. These pastimes are there in the book. So it's, you know, as I said, is they happened before, it can happen again. And anyway, I guess the conclusion is that, you know, we should take shelter of Krishna. We should take shelter of Krishna, take shelter of Lord Chaitanya, and you know, and all the and our the gurus and parampara disciplic succession. You know, that's like. We have absolutely nothing to lose and everything to gain. I'll just read one last thing, and I honestly and truly will stop after this. This is something Prabhupada said in a lecture he was giving. He's talking about, it's actually a lecture he was giving on the 16th chapter of Bhagavad Gita about this, the demons, the suras and the asuras, and he was talking about how the suras don't know how to behave. So he says, but the devotees, they know what to do and what not to do. So at one point he goes, you do not indulge in gambling. He says, but you indulge in gambling. What is that gambling? Papa says, that gambling is dedicate your life to Krishna and see the result. That is also gambling. Papa goes, that is gambling because everyone is engaged in his own business, but he's advised. You give up this business, you take to this Krishna consciousness. And he goes, and Papa says, that is also gambling because he does not know what will happen. So we should all, you know, just make a decision, decide to take that gamble, you know. Just like people go to Las Vegas in hopes of winning the jackpot, right? Nobody goes thinking to lose, you know. They're thinking, oh, I'm going to go there. I hope I hit the jackpot. So in the same way, you know, they're taking shelter of that. Their hope is that they're going to go there and get rich by winning, you know, by So Prabhupada's suggesting here, we gamble, but our gamble should be make the decision, I'm going to dedicate my life to Krishna, and I'm going to hope I hit the Krishna jackpot. And I think we have a lot better, the odds are in our favor, you know, because actually we're 100% assured that we are going to hit the jackpot. It's just a question of when. We'll either hit it sooner or later, but we're going to hit it. You know, I mean, it could happen like to that son of Maharaj Pratapuja by tomorrow morning or the very next moment, or it'll definitely happen if we follow the program sincerely. You know, I did mention he was a sincere devotee of the Lord. If we follow, you know, that program seriously, it'll happen at the end of this lifetime. You know, there's so many statements by Krishna, by Prabhupada, that if we just seriously and sincerely take to this, you know, dedicate our life to Krishna, as mentioned here, that we're going to, you know, get the supreme reward of going back home, back to God, pure devotional service and going back home, back to Godhead. So I'll stop there, and I've already went way over time, so I won't even take any questions. But thank you very much. Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.